Who are you and why are you here?
I'm Tony Pereira from Breadwinner Cycles, and we're here showing off some bikes.
Okay. So I was just at the commute show at the Mountain Bike Hall of Fame.
Cool.
And there was one of your bikes there.
Yeah, that was the prototype of the Goodwater.
The Goodwater.
Yes.
And the Goodwater, I mean, I saw how it was used for the commute. Mm-hmm. What's your vision of the bike?
Well, it really did evolve out of what James ended up using it for. He also owned one of our Bad Otis bikes that he used for the first commute, the one from Tahoe to San Francisco. And that was our really slack hardtail bike. So it's got a 160 fork and a 66 degree head tube angle. He wanted something that would be a better all day bike.
And more upright, softer tires.
Right. So he actually pitched the idea of the plus tires that I was not really into.
I can understand.
Well,
it seemed like they were good for the application, though.
Well, I've come around on it.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. but what we decided to do was steepen up the head tube angle a little bit, use a slightly shorter fork. He had an RS1 on that bike. We went it up with we're using the 34 Reba and a 140 for the Goodwater now. So his was really just a developmental step of the bike. But with a slightly steeper head tube angle, it climbs way better. It doesn't want to wander around at all. And I am totally sold on the plus tires.
For everything?
For everything.
Like, really?
This bike will fit 29.
Now I am going to get condescending.
Do what you got to do. I know your opinion of them, but that you can fit 29-inch wheels on this and run it more like a cross-country bike, lighter. But I this is what I ride, and I've been riding it for a year now. I would never do that. I guess maybe if I was doing a really long ride on relatively smooth trails, a 29er might just roll a little faster. But these are just so much fun. They hook up on everything. The traction is incredible. And
what about tire life, like slashing, that kind of stuff?
There's a problem there. Yeah, I think they're getting better.
You're not a super heavy rider, and you're probably not hucking huge, but are you getting a lot of side squirm?
No, I don't have any problems with side squirm or tire flex, but I do have. They make the sidewalls kind of thin to make them light enough.
Sure.
But the Minions are good. I haven't tried the new Schwalbes yet, but apparently they've beefed up the sidewalls on the Knobby Nicks.
Hopefully they cost extra.
Hopefully, yeah, yeah. On a hardtail, just that little bit extra air volume is just the sweet spot for a trail hardtail. And 2.8 seems fine to me. I haven't tried any three-inch tires yet, but you know, even the 2.8 DHRs or the Minions are like 2.6. They measure 2.6,
so sure.
They're not all that huge. And they're just so much fun.
If you need to pause, we can pause or whatever.
No, I just need to handle this.
Okay. So that's sort of the bike magazine talk. What are you guys struggling with in terms of design right now? Like, what's kind of making you kind of scratch your chins and kind of go, how do we solve these problems?
You know,
because you're starting to round out so that you have a model for each thing.
Well,
you're filled in.
For when we come to NABS each year, we often will launch a new model. It's like this is our biggest marketing event of the year.
That makes sense.
Right? we spend a ton of money on it, and so if we have something new, we usually roll it out here. This year we don't really have anything new. There isn't a problem we're really currently trying to solve. I mean, last year we came out with the
new for the sake of new is not a good thing.
Well, and exactly, we build what we ride, we build what we like. You know, we don't build fixed gear bikes. There's nothing wrong with them. That's not what we're into. We don't build BMX bikes, and we build the kind of bikes that we like to ride. So, you know, things that we're interested in. there's things we're interested in that don't necessarily apply to how we build the bikes, and that presents a bit of a challenge. Flat mounts, for instance, flat mount brakes. Shimano's Dura-Ace brakes are flat mount only. I'd like to spec them on my bikes. But we really like using a plate-style dropout and brazing them to the stays because it speaks to our roots of brazed bicycles. We, both Ira and I, prior to building Breadwinner, we made brazed bikes. I built Philip brazed bikes. He did lug bikes. We used slotted dropouts, and we brazed them together.
Are you still trying to get as much brass into your building as you can?
Not really. We like the way it looks.
Okay.
It speaks to us aesthetically.
A plate. You don't want a hood. You don't want
a
chunk.
We like it.
Okay.
So, you know, part of the reason we build bicycles is we like the way they look. We like the bike to look the way that we picture a bike.
Sure.
A great bike looking. And
we all have our vision.
Yeah. And to us, we love the sculptural quality of a scalloped, brazed stay dropout junction. And we love the webbing of a plate-style dropout that we put together.
But now you can't use Dura-Ace.
Well, you can't. It doesn't work with a flat mount. So do I go to hooded dropouts, which are great? They just don't have the same appearance.
It's not what you want. You don't
It's not
want
really
that.
What I want. And what is a performance gain?
Right,
and I don't really think there is one.
Oh, certainly there's a negligible performance gain.
Well, I don't need my rear brake to work any better.
I hear you. No, I totally get what you're saying and in terms of that.
Right.
And sacrificing your vision for the brake mount thing. I did a flat mount recently, and it's kind of like, I think a lot of the driving force for flat mount is an aesthetic reason.
It looks great.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic.
You know,
I
just
won't
like
argue with that.
Post mount for mountain bikes. Like, I've done some post-mount bikes, and I've done some ISO bike stuff, and I came up with my own system, which is an ISO derivative, and that's what I like.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't want to do post-mount on my bikes. Yeah, it looks clean. You have one less part.
Right.
But I think I get less of a bike for it.
Right.
You know, from my own personal thing, and I get that other people like post-mount and all that. So I totally get where you're at. And also, you have your own proprietary dropout.
Right. Right.
And which is a great solution to a problem.
Yeah, we're still able to use a plate mount, a plate style dropout with a through axle.
Yeah.
And we came up with this stainless insert that's brazed in, and we love the way it's working. And
I'm going to be doing a BMX fork type. I'm going to do a BMX clunker.
Oh, cool.
That's like one of the bikes on my list. And I'm looking at doing a fork, you know, proper BMX style fork,
uh-huh.
but for a 15 millimeter through axle.
Oh, cool.
And it's kind of like, how do I make it all work so it's right?
Yeah,
and I'm probably going to do something very similar.
Yeah, totally.
And just, it solves a lot of problems. It is truly a great way of looking at solving a problem.
Yeah, and you know, as far as Breadwinner goes, and one of the things that we set out to do with Breadwinner that was a lot different than what we did as one man shows, is making specific bike models and really thoroughly designing them and making sure everything worked perfectly and then working within that framework. And we've continued to do that. We've evolved a little bit. This year, we're now offering a steel fork on our gravel bike that's typically had a carbon fork. And it allows us to play around with front end geometry and different wheel sizes to make the bike appeal to different kinds of riders. But we're not changing a whole lot this year.
Have you guys ever looked into getting your own fork? Like you were just talking,
the first thing
that went through my head when you're saying, oh, we're going to throw a steel fork on to give us more options. I'm like, boy, that's going to suck to have a steel fork. And I'm like, you know, what about just getting 100 sort of different geometry forks done the way you
Well, last
want
year
them?
We built 100 bikes.
Okay.
This year we'll build 130.
Sure.
Or 150. We can't have a fork made.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not there yet.
But and I understand, like, building steel forks, it's like you're free.
Yeah.
It's like your handcuffs taken off.
Yeah. Yeah, it just opens up. So we've had a number of people. Ira and I both used to build a fair number of randonneuring bikes. And the randonneuring crowd likes low trail forks to allow for them to have a handlebar.
Did you listen to Don about his bender? And he was talking about bending for the...
For the long... No, I haven't, heard his pitch yet. I haven't heard his pitch
yet. Oh, he's good. Yeah, you got to hear that rant.
but we haven't been able to do that. You know, it's something we used to do. People kind of expected us to do it when we started Breadwinner and said, nope, sorry, we're going to stick to this formula. We're not going to go there. But we finally decided that we were going to do it. And we're actually having Chris Eigelhart make the forks for us. He's our welder. He's been around forever. He does great work for us. He makes these segmented forks. It's similar to like the old Yo Eddie fork, mm-hmm. which is where he comes from.
Sure.
You know Chris, you know who he is.
I used to work at Fat City. I worked forks immediately after he left.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. So all right. I didn't realize that.
So that's why when I do a segmented fork, I'm looking at it from a very unique perspective, probably as similar a perspective as Eigelhart might.
Yeah.
But with my own take.
Cool. So Chris does a segmented fork, yeah. and they're actually really light. So.
Oh, they're very light.
Yeah, they're real light.
The question is comfort.
It works great.
Usually.
Yeah.
So given that he's your welder, are you and Ira your main type of thing at Breadwinner? You're feeding him tacked frames type
yep.
of thing?
Yep.
And you just kind of keep churning them out and you just keep that boy busy?
We work in batches, so we will build 8 to 12 bikes at a time and just bring them over to him. He welds them up.
So you get a pickup truck bed full of bikes tacked,
yeah.
and just have them weld them.
Yeah.
And that's a nice business model.
It works for all of us.
You're paying for the welder.
We don't need a welder on staff all the time for the volume we're doing. It's at some point we're gonna need a welder around all the time.
Well, especially if you're trying to have models. You know, if everyone's a custom and everyone's weird and different, it kind of, you have to start solving little problems.
Right, right.
But if
right.
you know what's coming
right.
up, you build it into the line.
Right.
Yep. So what? You guys did your dropout last year, I think it was, that you were showing this. Or that's
yeah.
the first time I saw
yes,
it.
Yes, last year.
Okay.
Yep, yep.
Have you been doing other stuff? Like, do you have some neat parts of your own since?
No.
Okay.
No, we didn't do a lot of new stuff this year.
Uh-huh.
We really didn't.
But you're just getting a solid business.
Yeah, we're just keep growing the business, trying to.
Where are you seeing the growth in what you're doing?
This bike has been great for us. We've definitely sold more Goodwaters than any other mountain bike we've done in the past. It seems to be people are coming around to hardtails again, and the plus tires are definitely. Part of that, just because it's not suspension, but it takes that edge off in a way that I think people appreciate. It's mm-hmm. bringing people back to the hardtail. And then the all road or gravel bike is definitely super hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're working with Ira. You both started as your own frame builders. You both had visions. I think you were more of a mountain bike guy. He was a little mm-hmm. bit more of a road type guy. Although
Definitely.
You shared similar interests within riding.
Yep.
How is it collaborating and getting your vision squared away on, say, the Goodwater, the model? And it's kind of like you and Ira have ideas. You know, you're not reinventing the wheel here, but you know, you probably each have a different vision for how these internal lines should be, if they should be staggered or right next to each other.
I think,
or forward.
I think we share a lot of aesthetic sensibilities. So the basic aesthetics of the bikes are pretty easy to come by. I tend to take the lead on the mountain bike designs, and he tends to take more of the lead on the road and cross side of things. So, you know, we work extremely well together. I think we complement each other well, and we are usually on the same page when it comes right down to it. There's always a little compromise here and there. You know, we're like, okay, I'll do it your way, even though I think it should be the other way. And, you know, that works for us. But...
Who keeps score?
I probably do. He's a lot more laid back than I am.
So here's your bikes. Well, maybe it's not a model you'd want to do. What kind of bike would you like to have more call for? Or what kind of bike would you have more interest in working on?
That we don't do now?
Yeah, that you don't really get that itch scratch right now.
Well, I'm probably not answering this the way you envision, but I would love to sell more mountain bikes.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to do more of our city bikes. The city bike's hard, though. It's hard to justify spending $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 on a bike that you're going to lock up outside of a bar.
Yeah.
So.
And might get stolen.
Yeah, it's a security risk. But we do most of our customers that buy our city bikes, called the Arbor Lodge. It's the neighborhood. It's the name of the neighborhood we live in. They've usually bought another bike from us. It's usually a second, third, or fourth bike that they bought from us. To kind of round out the collection. But I would love to be able to do more of those. And the way that we build bikes, it's not something we're going to be able to bring the price down on. And I think that's something I would love to be able to do, build more transportation bikes. And then I'd love to be able to sell more mountain bikes. You know, the mountain bike market is definitely favoring full suspension bikes these days.
Yeah, so, it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough, but I'm very proud of our mountain bikes, and I would love to get more people on them.
I think the first time I saw a Chris King bottom bracket was on one of your bikes.
It could have been
Single Speed Worlds or something.
They were the first ones that left Chris King.
All right.
That went to somebody outside of their organization.
Do you?
I still have that bottom bracket.
There we go.
It still works.
Do you get to work with them a bunch? Do you get any sort of like? Not preferential treatment, but you guys get to be tied into the same page
a little bit. Yeah, they're friends. They're friends, and we almost every single bike we sell has a Chris King headset on it. Every single bike here has a Chris King headset on it. The B Road over here has their new color, one of their new colors.
The matte.
The matte. Yeah.
Is that embargo yet?
I think today is the day.
Yeah. So let's de-embargo here. So. Yeah, oh, here we go. Yeah.
So they're doing three matte colors.
Yeah.
I believe.
This is interesting. Is this an inter?
No, it's just that's just the spacer.
It just blends in really well.
Yeah. So they did a cool little graphic treatment. There's like lines going through the logo now and the.
Oh yeah. That.
But this is called Slate. They have black. I think they call it Jet. Yeah, Jet, Slate, and I think the third one is like a bronze color.
Yeah, somehow I think a lot of murdered bikes called. Are gonna get new wheels.
Yeah, right.
Because they're like, no,
it's cool. It's you know, it's sort of like that 40th anniversary stuff they did.
Uh-huh.
Just
yeah.
A few different colors.
So we
were able to do that with them. You know,
they do their own in-house anodizing.
That's not a question for me.
Okay.
I don't think so.
All right, because you know, it's always interesting when people get Premier anodizing done.
No, I'm pretty sure they have somebody else do it.
But, do you guys use brass or silver on these?
Silver.
Uh-huh. I had to do some of these for my wife's bike, and I'm like, man, I suck at brass. I'm just going to burn the tube.
You got to get them hot.
Heck, I'm going to use some 45. I'm going to play it safe, you know?
Yeah.
But if you guys are using silver, I figure it's the way to go.
Fine. Yeah, silver works fine.
So for brazons, what do you use brass on versus silver?
We use silver on most everything. Uh-huh. We have a little on our cross bike. We use a little one arm cable stop, and we use brass on that.
So you'd use brass if you were doing it into.
We use brass on the dropouts,
But not structurally, or do you actually braze them in, and then the rest of the bike is welded? That kind of building.
Yeah, the dropout to stay junction is brass brazed.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you were saying that Chris welds your bikes.
Right.
But
so
you do this end.
We braze. So we start the first sub-assembly is dropout to chainstay.
And then that gets all cleaned and filed. And you're doing that with
brass. Yep. Uh-huh. That gets defluxed, filed. All the finish work is done on that. And then it gets mitered and then cleaned. And then we can weld it. So once you get all the flux out of there, then it's welding safe.
Okay.
So that's our first sub-assembly. And then we machine all the tubes and tack everything together, and then Chris does the welding. And then they come back without seat stays on them, and we braze the stays in. So they're brazed up here.
Really? Okay, yeah. Interesting.
It's part of our design language.
Sure.
And it speaks to our roots, which we're real proud of. So.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I had a big internet argument about seat tubes first and stuff like that. And it lends to that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, we'll throw the seat stays on last. It's like, oh, you know, just how you're
works
coming
us.
At it.
Yeah.
You know, old school, like with lugs, it's like, yeah, you're going to start with that tube first.
Right.
Right. If you're building out of a jig, if you're going to fill it or TIG, there's no reason to make the seat tube the first tube.
Experimental.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. yeah, it's interesting when you hear Curtis Inglis talk about which joints get welded, which ones get brazed, and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You guys kind of share that where you're kind of mixing things in
right.
there.
He really mixes it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So if you were going to interview another person here, who would you want to interview? And why?
I don't know. Who's here?
Everybody's here.
I don't know. I've personally interviewed everybody here over the years.
Huh.
Carl's always really fun to talk to.
I talked to Carl first.
Oh, that's right.
Everyone says to talk to Carl. It's funny.
Well, because he'll talk about anything.
But he also knows a lot about a lot of shit.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Okay, I'll move along. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye.